Chapter 21, Cali and the Memphis Blues. To put it bluntly, Afghanistan is not the cleanest place on earth, nor are military bases. It has no sanitation systems to speak of, sewage systems, trash pickup, and through the grinding gears of war, poverty, and imperialism, things like germ theory and cleanliness kind of go out the window. Trash and human waste pile up everywhere, and our base, along with the city of Kandahar, kind of smells like something out of your worst nightmare. Combine all that with almost no health care of any kind, and it leads to some pretty horrific outbreaks of illness and disease. That's where our lily-white pampered asses come in. Back home, we have fully functioning sewage and sanitation systems, and an almost working healthcare system, depending on how much money you have. Our pristine insides were in no way prepared for the beating they were going to take while in Afghanistan. The army tried its best to prepare us. We were injected with so many vaccines that I had lost count. I was protected against diseases I had never even heard of. Most of what I recognized were from history books. They weren't things that I thought of people still having to deal with. Diphtheria, cholera, smallpox, the vaccine that left a massive scar on everybody's shoulder, just to name a few. There were other shots too, but after a while, they all just kind of blended together. We all figured that after that barrage of vaccines, we were bulletproof against anything Afghanistan would throw at our immune systems, and we were not even close to being right. Within the first few weeks of deployment, Memphis went down. It started with diarrhea and quickly led to vomiting. Both of those things eventually became uncontrollable. The big country boy was laid out in his cot, puking off the side and shitting his pants. Gong, being a decent and caring medic, did his best to clean up after him and keep a steady flow of IV fluids going into him so he didn't die of dehydration. Once Memphis caught whatever he had caught, it started a never-ending cycle and tore through our platoon one man at a time. Author's note here. This is super common. It's kind of has like various different nicknames, like barracks crud is another name. If whenever you compact a ton of people into an enclosed space, it kind of goes on forever. But because he's our unlucky patient zero, we dubbed the sickness the Memphis Blues in honor of his uncontrolled diarrhea, and nobody was safe from the blues. I was hit by it a week or so after Memphis went down. My case ended up being way worse than his. Gong insisted that I stay in bed and keep up with my fluids, but I insisted that I was fine. I wouldn't take a single day off from patrolling or working out in our shitty makeshift prison gym. This ended up being my downfall. One day, while out in the burning sun, I was lifting weights and going at it as hard as a sexually frustrated young man locked up in a war zone could go. I loaded up plate after plate on a barbell and prepared to deadlift. I bent over, grabbed the bar, lifted with all of my power. I grunted, strained, and yelled. The bar inched up very slowly, scraping against my shins as it went. Then my lift quickly turned bad. I got lightheaded. I dropped the bar, and I nearly passed out. I fell to my knees with bright colors flashing in my eyes. I tasted copper in my mouth, and my head pounded. Then I shit my pants. It wasn't something I could consciously stop from happening. It just happened. No one was around, so I tried to struggle my way over to the porta-johns. I was so lightheaded I could barely walk. I ended up crawling across the ground, shit streaming along behind me as I made my way for the toilets. After that, I decided to listen to Gong and stay on my cot. Not that I had much of a choice. After my failed lifting session, my condition quickly went downhill. As soon as I tried to drink or eat anything, it would rocket its way out of my body in one way or another. After a few days, I gave up trying to nourish myself in any way and waited for the release of shit-covered death. Gong hooked me up to two different IVs and kept prodding me to eat something. He was like my little Asian deployment mother telling me that I was just skin and bones. He wasn't wrong. Within the first week of being felled by the Memphis Blues, I lost 15 pounds. Trays of uneaten food piled up around my cot as Gong tried to convince me that I needed to eat so I would survive. I didn't move other than to retch into an ammo box someone had brought over to me to act as a bucket, or to attempt to race to the porta-johns to fire burning liquid out of my ass. I lapsed in and out of consciousness, and no one other than Gong bothered to even check in on me. Over a week passed, and I wasn't getting any better. Gong started to get a little concerned and talked about sending me back to Kandahar Airfield to see an actual doctor. But things like a soldier's general health really don't matter when you have a war to fight. After about a week and a half, Slim kicked me awake and stood over me. "Wake up, fucker, we have to go on patrol." I slowly opened my eyes. They were so dehydrated, I swear I could hear them crack as my eyelids slid over my eyeballs. "What?" I croaked through a terminal case of cotton mouth. "It's been a week, you should be fine." "Alright, let me get my clothes on." I struggled to sit up. That little amount of effort caused my head to spin on its axis. My stomach lurched, but I fought my way back to my feet. I staggered and stumbled around trying to put pants on for the first time in what seemed like forever. Gong had to help me put on my combat gear. He handed me my rifle. He talked to Slim, and he tried to get me out of having to go, but it was useless. I dragged my feet out to meet with the platoon and prepare for our patrol. Everyone recoiled in horror when they saw me. "Jesus Christ, he looks like a fucking zombie," Callie cringed. "Still good enough to fuck your mother." "See?" Slim slapped my shoulder. "He's good. Let's get going." It was dark out, and the rough Afghan terrain was only lit by the moon and the stars. Several Afghan policemen joined us, and we ventured out into the night. I lagged at the back of our column with a few of the Afghans. This was hardly the best place to be when I was perfectly healthy and alert. Right then, it was damn near suicide. I wasn't looking anywhere other than down at my own feet, trying my hardest just to keep moving, and the Afghans noticed my struggle. "You okay, friend?" said one of the Afghans in broken English. I was bent over with my hands on my knees, my rifle dangled uselessly from its sling. "Yeah, friend, I'm fucking grand," I barely managed to get out. The words were barely out of my mouth before vomit rushed up my throat. The burning bile splashed across the Afghan's boots, and he shrieked and jumped back. "Sorry, bro," I coughed and wiped my mouth with my sleeve. Slim must have heard the commotion at the back of the patrol, because it didn't take him long to go running back there. Slim took one look at me, bent over and vomiting all over our Afghan brother in arms, and mustered up all of his compassion. He bent down next to me and whispered in my ear, "What the fuck is wrong with you now?" "I think my insides are dying," I moaned. More bile bubbled up in the back of my throat and splashed into the dirt. "I swear you're a fucking pussy sometimes." "Yeah, that's me. Huge pussy." I puked again. Finally, Slim had some mercy on me and turned the patrol back around before I collapsed. Gong helped me back into bed and stuck more needles into my arm. The patrol walked back out the gates without me. I was sidelined for another week before I recovered. But probably the funniest case of the blues was Sal's. Unfortunately, Sal, being a medic, was someone we simply couldn't do without. So throughout his whole sickness, he had to slog alongside us on patrol. One night, while attempting to raid a target's house, he stood up next to me with a start. "I got a shit, bro," he moaned and rushed off into the bushes without warning. I heard him crashing off through the brush like an animal for a few minutes before he settled down. I couldn't see him in the pitch darkness, but someone above sure could. Above us hovered a Kiowa Warrior recon helicopter outfitted with heat and night vision. I heard someone's voice over the radio. "Spartan 2-2, this is Long Knife." Long Knife being the call sign of the helicopter. "This is Spartan 2-2, Slim said. "Be advised, there's an armed pantsless man in the bushes about 50 meters to your squad's rear." I could hear the voice on the radio fighting back laughter. An author's note here, I am too. I don't know how much of the laughter has been edited out of me trying to read this. He had used his multi-million dollar piece of weaponry to see our poor, sick medic shitting his brains out in the bushes behind us. But not necessarily the funniest, but the worst case of the blues goes to Callie. In his case, the symptoms started while we were out on patrol, and he suddenly started having to stop every few minutes to run into the bushes to shit. Later that night, he couldn't get off of his cot without projectile vomiting like the girl from The Exorcist. Sal was watching over Callie's deteriorating condition in our shared tent. He was lying in a pool of his own sweat, vomiting, mostly dead to the world. "He gonna die?" I asked. "Not really sure if he's alive now," Sal joked. His vomiting is getting worse. I think I'm going to have to give him some medicine other than saline. What am I getting? Sally croaked through his dry throat. Something to help your stomach feel better. We helped Callie to his feet, me holding an IV bag over his head while Sal gave him physical support. We walked him across our little base and into the aid station. Sal's aid station was little more than a wooden shack with a cot in it, and he sat Callie down on the cot, took the IV from my hands, and placed it on a stand. Sal popped the top off of a little bottle of medicine and drew it into a syringe. He rolled Callie over and stuck the long needle directly into his ass cheek. Callie was so out of it, he didn't even flinch. What was that, I asked. It'll help his nausea, but it has a slight side effect.
Like what?
Well, it'll make him act like he's drunk as hell. Normally that's not a big deal, but, you know, we're in the middle of Kandahar. If he goes wandering off into the middle of the night and gets his head cut off, we're gonna have to watch him.
Good point.
We picked Callie up and walked him back over to his cot. We carefully laid him down and set his IV back up. He didn't seem drunk. He was just tired and out of it, like I was when I was fighting the blues. But it didn't take long for the effects of Sal's butt shot to take effect. Callie started giggling to himself and rolling back and forth on his cot. It was like he wasn't even sick anymore. The laughing stopped as quickly as it had begun.
I gotta puke, he said.
He rolled out of his cot, tearing the IV from his arm and left it dangling and dripping blood all over the place. He crawled hand over hand to the entrance of the tent and puked into the rocks. I remembered I was supposed to be helping and assisting him, but instead I was watching and laughing at him. I started to feel a little guilty when I saw Sal was doing the same thing.
Shit, Callie said, drooling puke out of the corner of his mouth.
What? I asked.
I shit myself.
I fucking shit myself.
Wonderful.
Sal shook his head.
I have to shit again, Callie informed us.
Pulled himself back to his feet and drunkenly wandered off into the night. Sal and I chased after him as he staggered to the line of faded blue porta-johns. Callie nearly tore the door off the hinges of the nearest one and climbed inside. The door slammed shut and we could hear him banging around inside. The porta-john shook and rocked and moved around.
What the fuck is he doing in there? Sal asked.
No idea. You think he's okay? Almost as if he was trying to answer our questions, the porta-john shook violently and we heard a loud splash.
Ah, motherfucker!
Callie screamed from the inside. Sal and I shot each other a confused look and ran to the door. Callie had locked it from the inside, so we had to force entry into the porta-potty. It was a surprisingly sturdy lock for it being plastic. Finally, it snapped under our assault and we got to see what was going on inside. Callie was standing inside the toilet of the porta-john, more than waist deep in that mysterious blue liquid that swam with human waste.
How in the fuck did you manage this?
Sal wasn't fighting back a damn thing. He was laughing so hard, he wasn't even making noise anymore. That choking, silent laughter. In between fits of laughter, we managed to pull Callie out of the shitter. He was almost covered from his chest down in blue liquid. It looked like paint.
What do we do with this guy?
I asked Sal. We were trying our hardest to help him along, but not let his lower half touch us.
He needs a fucking shower, Sal said.
After the shitter incident, if we put him in a shower, he might drown himself.
God damn it, we're gonna have to bathe him.
He can't walk around covered in shit and blue juice. He'll get hep C or something.
I hate you so fucking much right now, I muttered into Callie's ear.
We slowly walked to our single working shower stall. It would only produce ice cold water, but I figured that was good enough to wash the shit and disease off of Callie. We walked Callie up to the rickety steps that led to the shower. We sat him down inside and stepped back.
Get naked, you gross motherfucker, Sal said, trying to look away.
I did the same. Callie fumbled with his clothes, and after a whole lot of fighting, he got them off. Sal squeezed past Callie, who was trying his hardest to stay on his feet, and turned the shower on. I picked a bottle of liquid body wash and just sprayed it at Callie.
Rub that shit around, I said, trying my hardest not to look anywhere near him.
Callie was hardly the last person to catch the blues, but he was by far the worst case. As far as I know, I was the only one to ever vomit on an Afghan cop, and he was the only one to take a swim in a porta potty.
Sal never tried to treat anyone with more than IV fluids after that. I guess having to physically shower a man who is one of your best friends changes your approach to medicine. I never offered to help Sal in his aid station ever again.